Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So we have a fun show for you today. I recorded yesterday an awesome interview with my friend Daniele Mazzanti in Milano. Took a deep dive on Milan right after the news on Kier. So we'll have that at the end of the show available to all. Of course, we have Serie A games this weekend. So we have our dear friend Thousand Names on deck with his game picks, and we have a special part of the podcast for patrons only. But I'm joined for the opening segment, as usual, by our producer, co-host of the show, the awesome Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, I wanted to talk to you at the top a little bit about Atalanta and Juve. So let's start with this. Right now, Atalanta are at 31 points. They are 5 points behind league-leading Napoli. They've been making a good run recently. And then we have Juve, who are currently in seventh place, 24 points, 7 points behind Atalanta to try to sneak into that last Champions League spot, which even Allegri conceded at this point has to be the goal for the season. So I'm going to ask you this, Alex. What do you buy more? The idea that Atalanta is actually going to win the Scudetto this year, something we've been flirting with on this podcast for quite some time, or you Juve somehow sneaking back into the top four?
Yeah, it's a great question, David, because obviously you're fighting with history in Juve's corner. And just the fact that I feel like there are still plenty of people who might not even be paying attention on a week-to-week basis that are like, nah, Juve will still get it, because maybe they're a Fairweather fan and maybe they also know that, albeit Napoli being good and AC Milan being good and Inter being good, I wouldn't say those teams, especially from a European perspective, are unbeatable or are monster super teams right now. So maybe someone who's casually paying attention would be like, nah, Juve will still get up at least into the top four. But I'm sorry, I'm going with it's more likely that Atalanta will win Serie A then Juve sneak back into the top four. And I'm just at the point, David, and I also need to say that this is not a prisoner of the moment take because my Chelsea absolutely slapped up Juve. I'm just at the point where I'm seeing kind of, and this is going to sound like lazy analysis to some, but I'm seeing the vibe of Juventus and it's a bit dead. It really feels lifeless. And sure, you may get a good game here and there from Paulo Dybala or Alvaro Morata. Maybe McKinney has a good game. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying there are bad players who can't have good games. But, David, it doesn't seem to really materialize into any nice bit of running form. And I also just think that the fear factor within Serie A of Juve is gone. I think it's completely, completely gone. But actually, I think that it's a double negative for Juve in that sense. And what I mean by that is teams no longer fear them like they used to. With that said, they still give Juve their best shot because it's still Juve. So they're still getting probably an extra punch from teams, yet they don't even fear them like they used to. And they're just obviously not as good. I said in the last episode that, I don't know, Allegri now returning to Juve. I'm not going to sound like a hypocrite here because I think when he returned to Juve, I was like, all right, like I get it. It'll stabilize them again and hopefully bring them back to where they were, or at least somewhere close to that. But you know what? In hindsight, which can definitely be 2020, I don't know. I made the comparison that it feels like Shaquille O'Neal just trying to stay in the NBA. And I'm not saying Allegri overall as a manager is at that point, but him back with Juve, it's like, okay, maybe this is just not going to work out. They just feel a little bit dead. Atalanta? Oh, everything I just said about Juve, it's kind of the opposite. I mean, what a lively team. What a spirited team. What a team with such belief. And actually, I'm going to also sound probably simplistic here, but belief is a strong, strong power. And I feel like Atalanta have it just as much as any team in Serie A. And to expand on belief being a strong power, I've learned two crazy things in the last 24 hours, one football related, one non-football related. Okay. The non-football related thing, and this is going to be really kind of a stretch, but I read something that there were mice that were, of course, experimented on, as all mice are. And somehow the mice were in water with some type of a hope, I guess, that they were going to be rescued. I don't know how you engineer that, but it was engineered where the mice believed that if they kept swimming, they would obviously get out and get rescued. You want to know how many hours they were able to swim for with just the sheer belief that they would get rescued? I was thinking 1, 2, 3 hours, 60 hours, 60 hours. That's unimaginable, unimaginable. And the moral of the story there was, wow, what can belief do to you? Now let's bring it back to football. Everybody knows N'Golo Kanté, okay? Of course, probably the most humble, least cocky person there ever has been, ever, maybe in the history of humanity, okay? He makes me feel worse about myself because I just know he's a pure human being. And hey, I think I'm a decent human being, but I'm not like him, okay? Apparently last year around the Atletico Madrid fixtures in the Champions League, he said to a few Chelsea players, I think we're going to win the Champions League. And him saying that, the belief that he had that we would win the Champions League. And then, mind you, yeah, he gets injured a lot, but didn't he clean up the Man of the Match awards in all of those big Champions League games? Belief is a strong power. And I just feel like Atalanta has it. Honestly, if you compare them to the rest of Europe, they might have it at least in the top five category. Of course, the Liverpools, the Cities, the Bayerns, the Chelseas are going to have strong belief. But in terms of a team that backs themselves, Atalanta, I think of almost immediately. And also, David, I mean, if I'm just going to get factual here, you've already kind of mentioned the table, but they're only 5 points behind top spot. And the goal differential is not miles off Napoli's. So listen, they can get as hot as anyone in the world. I think, you know, I'm really starting to get enamored with an old Chelsea boy, Pasalic. And of course, though, they're just a team that's not built around one player. So honestly, I really, really, really do think Atalanta has a better chance of winning the Scudetto than Juve have of getting into the top four. I really am surprising myself saying that if I kind of remember how I felt probably over the summer or for the last 8, 9, 10 years, even though I've always kind of been enamored with Atalanta. But yeah, I'm at that point. So, you know, speaking of Atalanta, to further the conversation, David, what did you make of Gasperini extending his contract with them?
Yeah, let me get to that. But you said some really, really interesting thing. Love the example of the mice. Look, you know, we're recording this right after there's more news on Juve's being investigated for financial troubles. I did a podcast for our patrons just on Plusvalenze on Tuesday, kind of explaining all that, going through the history and explaining why Juve is being investigated now. But now it sounds like that's probably the least of their concerns is the part on the Plusvalenze. So there's more to come on this. I don't want to react too much to just the news now. But, you know, they are looking at things that have to, you know, Juve is a publicly traded company, of them not releasing things, them changing a little bit their balance sheet. So, you know, these things haven't been proven, but Juve's got a lot going on, and this could become a massive distraction there. And you were talking about the goal differential. I'd like to point out that Juve's goal differential is just +4. Atalanta's +15. Atalanta are going to face Napoli this weekend. Napoli decimated by injuries. I'll tell you, if Atalanta can win this game, and there's been times where games where we really think they have a chance to win and get over the hump and they don't. I think of like the Coppa Italia final as a great example where we're like, oh, finally they're going to win a trophy after 50 years. They deserve it and they don't do it. So I'm going to say if Atalanta can go in and beat Napoli with Napoli being decimated and bridging that gap, I think that belief that you described is really going to take off. So we'll see there. I don't want to bury Juve. We'll talk about them more in a second. But let's get back to Gasperini. So the news was announced during the week, right after their midweek game, that Gasperini is going to sign an extension. And my first reaction to this is, and maybe it's because I'm getting older, that sometimes in life we are just way too obsessed with growth, improving, increasing, going up a level. I think Gasperini and Atalanta in every way are just a perfect match, especially the Atalanta that we have now in this moment, that I think it's perfect that he's staying. I've said many times, and I remember I even had Man United fans saying, oh, it'd be great to have Gasperini. And then I've had Juve fans after, you know, I tweeted that Gasperini had signed an extension, that Juve fans telling me, oh, this is such a shame. We'd love to have this guy. He's awesome. His teams play so well. But, you know, he can do this at Atalanta. I think a lot of what Tudor, who used to be one of Pirlo's assistants at Juve, when he got to Verona and he turned him around and he was asked, hey, you know, could this happen at Juve? And he said, absolutely not. He goes, you can coach a team like Verona in a way that you would never at Juve. You would never be able to run players into the ground the way Verona, you know, still has that Juric imprint, and he's a disciple of Gasperini. So that's kind of in that tree there of coaching. So I think there's a lot to that. I think it would be very hard for Gasperini to replicate the way his team plays on another team, on a bigger team. And as you said, Alex, the collective, that makes a lot of sense. Like Atalanta definitely has many standout players, but it's really about the collective. So imagine that on like teams with like superstars who, you know, obviously want to take care of their own branding there. So that to me, my reaction was like, you know what? In life, maybe we shouldn't always look for growth. You know, if you're at a job where you love the people that you work with, you have a boss that you trust, you're on the same page, is going somewhere where you can say maybe make up 5-10% more, is that really worth it? It's not always is. And in Gasperini's case, it's also, it probably wouldn't be a good fit for the other club. For those that, you know, somewhat casual Serie A fans, Gasperini was superb at Genoa, you know, one of the great teams from like about 10 years ago. He made his way to Inter and he only lasted like less than 2 months, if I remember correctly. It was a complete disaster. And Inter was, you know, of course, they're a huge club, but this isn't when Inter was doing really well. So imagine him at a club that's doing well or a club that has like a huge profile. It's at the point where Gasperini doesn't even want to talk about his time at Inter. I have a friend that's interviewed him quite a few times, did a great profile on him, and I was helping him put it out in English. And it was like, and I asked him, I was like, wow, you didn't ask him anything about his time at Inter. And he goes, yeah, I know. If I asked him, he goes, he would have just turned sour and not said anything else. So remember, I think this is a good lesson in life. It's not always, the grass isn't always greener. It's not always better to seek for growth. And as someone that loves Serie A, I'm thrilled that Gasperini is staying there. We're going to be able to enjoy this ride a few more years. And again, this is a great time for Atalanta. They're in strong financial shape. They've redone their stadium. They look like a lock at least to make it back to the Champions League again, which is absolutely incredible. And I do think they have an outside shot at the Scudetto. The injuries to Napoli and Milan, you know, could really have a huge impact. So it might be a little bit premature and prisoner of the moment to say that it's going to come down to Inter or Atalanta. But I also wouldn't fault anyone for saying that now. I still believe Milan and Napoli. I'm not writing them off by any means. But right now, there's no doubt that Inter and Atalanta are the two teams with the most momentum.
Yeah, momentum's such a big word with Atalanta because, like I said, Juve, it seems like they can't get really any momentum. Atalanta, I mean, momentum can carry them even when they're not at their best in the next game. And yeah, I mean, listen, if your only reason why you're going to say a team's going to do well or poorly is based on a vibe, then it's probably not the best analysis. So I just want to make that clear that I don't only go off of those things. But listen, if Chelsea was in the same league as Atalanta, I would hate playing them twice a season. I absolutely would. They're a team that I just don't want to face. They kind of remind me a little bit of Leicester City within the Premier League, but obviously the rest of the context in the league is different. Like in Serie A right now, there isn't a Liverpool, City, or Chelsea where it's just going to be hard to get past them. But in years past, Leicester have been a thorn in many of these teams' sides. With that said, Atalanta are even more potent. Leicester can score goals, but Atalanta, they're even more potent. Like they remind me, and David, this is your example. This was 1,000% your example. But that Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire, Mike D'Antoni's sons one that you had years back, pretty good one because they can absolutely slap you up if you're not careful. All right. So on the other spectrum, we've spoken about Atalanta, we've spoken about Juve, but now just to focus on Juve, this is certainly something I plan on watching. But David, what did you make of the Amazon documentary on Juventus All or Nothing?
Yeah, and by the way, as we're recording, I see Juve Twitter going absolutely crazy over this new news, this new investigation, which I want to chew on and talk about more on Tuesday. But let's go back to the documentary. Let's keep it a little bit lighter. I thought it was incredibly well done, incredibly well produced. I loved the behind the scenes in the locker room, the tactical sessions. I thought too, the focus on the players was interesting. I absolutely loved that. I think it was the second or third episode, they even talked about the Insuperabili, the awesome nonprofit that we've been supporting on this podcast. They run football camps for kids with disabilities, and to watch Chiellini in action with the kids was really, really awesome. So kudos. I thought it was incredibly well done. But I do find documentaries in general can be incredibly manipulative. Obviously, it's very easy to control narrative. You know, when you choose to focus on a person and how you set them up. There was like one scene where Pirlo is preparing the game in Spain against Barcelona, where he's basically talking to his assistants, and it's almost like they're quizzing him. They're giving him a tactical situation. It's like he has to find the right answer. He gives it, and then they show the game, the best game under Pirlo when they won 3-0 against Barca. So you can play up the great parts. Imagine had you done that, like the tactical session before the draws against Benevento, and showed him preparing that match, and then you show that, you'd be like, oh, Pirlo doesn't know what he's doing. So there's that. And I think it's like really pretty manipulative too. If you watch that, you would think that Kulusevski lit the world on fire in his first season at Juve. I could say this because I'm a huge fan of his. I thought he was going to be awesome. It didn't work out. But if I watch that documentary, it's like, oh, wow, it turned out the way I thought it would here. But then the last point that I want to make is the timing of the release. This goes back to it being a little bit manipulative. And when I say this, I'm not saying it's on purpose, by the way. I'm just saying it just kind of happens to be this way. Like right now, you are watching Pirlo coaching at a time that Allegri is really, really struggling at Juve. So if you watched this anytime around the really bad loss to Chelsea, and instead, yeah, they've been a little bit better here or there. So if you watch it at that time, you're like, oh my God, what have we done? Pirlo looks like so promising, and we're here stuck with Allegri. It's so easy to fall in that. I think this would have come off completely different had it been released sooner, had it been released before this season started, or if, say, Juve was playing well right now, you would look at it totally different. And finally, and this, Alex, I'd be curious when you do eventually watch it to hear your thoughts. I have to say, you know, I was very interested in watching Ronaldo on it because, again, you're watching it knowing that Ronaldo is leaving, eventually left Juve. And, you know, I'm sure he had say on pretty much everything, how he was portrayed in this documentary. He's in his underwear about half the time that he's on, and he comes off, I would say, overall pretty well. You know, I'm not a fanboy of his. I don't dislike him either. I'm pretty neutral. But I have to say, if you ask me, do I like Ronaldo more or less after watching that documentary, I have to say I probably like him a little bit more. But then knowing that he leaves, it's really pretty interesting. So I recommend it. It's well done. Just a quick word to Juve fans. I know right now this is a very tense situation. But let's not forget how awesome Juve was in this stretch these past 10 years. You really shouldn't forget that. I do think, you know, Juve got into this thing of trying to seek growth and really embrace growth, kind of what I talked about Gasperini. And look, you know, on the surface, and they showed this a lot in the documentary, there are two main themes that I really noticed on the documentary. I thought they hit you over the head a little bit too much about the veterans passing their knowledge on to the young players. Now, I don't know whose decision that was to make that like a huge storyline. I don't know if it was Amazon. I don't know if it was Juve. I don't know if it was Chiellini and Bonucci and Buffon were prominently featured. But, you know, there's this whole storyline of young players struggling to do well at Juve. And you look at the storyline about them, you know, basically being at the mercy of the veterans and the veterans having to teach them everything, when, quite frankly, De Ligt and Chiesa, by the time they arrived to Juve, they had accomplished something already. And then the other big theme is, you know, the obsession over the Champions League. So look, we've been critical on this podcast of the Ronaldo acquisition, that they really couldn't afford it. It didn't work out. And then they were kind of chasing the dragon to keep making it work. And this is probably why they are in the trouble here. But on the surface, I've been very critical of Andrea Agnelli. But on the surface, if, you know, the goal was to win the Champions League, you can't fault them for trying to go all in, getting arguably the greatest player in Champions League history. But again, it goes back to growth. Sometimes when you seek that out, it can get you in trouble. So in that sense, I'm thrilled that Gasperini is staying at Atalanta.
Mm. Yeah, on the documentary, I have every intention to watch it. I mean, I can't get enough of that stuff in general. I absolutely ate up the Spurs All or Nothing documentary because as a Chelsea fan, it was like watching stand-up comedy. So, yeah. And if Jose Mourinho is going to be part of it, then honestly, it's just absolutely must-see TV. So really good stuff there. Speaking of must, I won't say must-see, but must-hear, that would always be Thousand Names and his contributions to the show. So as we always do before a weekend of football, we do our game pick segment where you and Thousand predict some games. So, David, what are you guys saying for this weekend?
Man, it's dangerous when I don't check ahead of time and I just read them out. So we're going to take a leap of faith here. Okay, first up, Juve hosting Genoa. Genoa have not looked very good. Milan destroyed them midweek. Thousand has this finishing 1-1 goal by Dybala. Fair is fair. He's been playing well recently. And an own goal by Cuadrado. Thousand Names love sticking this to me. And he says in the derby between the teams who falsify their balance sheet, boredom wins. He says Sheva's going to make Juve cry again. If you remember, he had the penalty kick in Manchester against Juve in the final against Milan. And he says Allegri is going to be now involved in the battle to avoid relegation, and that Szczesny is disastrous. So sorry, Juve fans, I was trying to cheer you up a little bit earlier. Not so much with a Thousand Names. In Italian, Juve Genoa 1-1, Dybala, Cuadrado, autogol nel derby fra le squadre che falsificano i bilanci, vince la noia, Sheva fa piangere di nuovo la Juve, Allegri coinvolto in zona salvezza, Szczesny disastroso. I'm going to disagree with Thousand. I'm going to say Genoa has not been very good. Juve, I think Juve is going to rally this. I think we're going to have a Corto Muso win 1-0, and I'll go with Dybala, who has been playing well recently, but to me the question is he going to be able to keep playing consistently this well once Chiesa comes back? Next up, huge game, definitely the biggest one of the weekend. So we have a Napoli hosting Atalanta. Fabian Ruiz, Koulibaly going to be out. Sounds like Insigne might be able to come back. Thousands has Napoli winning 1-0, goal by Zielinski. He says Zapata's going to miss a penalty. He says Spalletti in an emergency is going to take down Gasperini, although he has his mind on the Champions League. And he says Pasalic against the strong teams never scores. And he says Jim City is going to be humiliated by Mertens. In Italian, Napoli-Atalanta 1-0, Zielinski, Zapata sbaglia rigore, Spalletti in emergenza batte Gasperini con la testa alla Champions, Pasalic contro le squadre forti non segna mai, Jim City umiliato da Mertens. This is a tough game because, as I said, I need to see Atalanta win one of these games where I'm like, okay, this is a hump game. You need to get over this hump. On paper, everything's leaning their way. Koulibaly, Fabian Ruiz being out, massive losses for Napoli. But I'm going to go draw. I do have faith on what Spalletti's been doing there. I'm going to go 1-1. I'm going to give a goal to Lozano, and I'm going to ride Zapata's hot streak. So a result that, you know, is okay for both teams, I would say. Last up, Cagliari hosting Torino, and Thousand has Cagliari winning 1-0, goal by João Pedro. Mazzarri returns to victory against his ex-team. Juric is working on President Cairo because he built him a ridiculous team, and goalkeeper Milinkovic-Savic is embarrassing. Cagliari really needs points. They're really, really in rough shape. Torino have lost some games where they had some bad luck. I'm going to go draw, and I'm going to go 0-0. Mazzarri, Juric, I think they're going to nullify each other. So I'm going to go 0-0. So as always, Thousand, thank you so much for your contributions. We love your picks. We're going to have you back on the podcast early next year as we get into the second half of the season. So before we get to Daniele Mazzanti on Milan, which is going to be available to all, we're going to have a special part of the pod for our patrons. If you enjoy hearing us on Friday, we have always a Tuesday episode. This week, I also did a bonus episode just on plusvalenza, just going deep into the subject, giving examples, and also talking a little bit about the situation. You're able to ask us questions. We have tiers with awesome articles by Enrico Passarella, Frank Risorto, and sometimes yours truly, and a great community. And as I mentioned at the top, we support the Insuperabili with the proceeds from the podcast. They really are a great organization.
Oh, I'm so excited to welcome our next guest. He's become our Milan correspondent on the pod for quite some time. My good friend Daniele Mazzanti, who kills it on Vox to Box, my favorite podcast on culture in Italian, in any language. It's my favorite podcast. And since the last time he's been on, he's also been referred to as one of the stars of Italian Twitter. So, you know, have some respect when you listen to Daniele. So my good friend, always a real pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcio Land.
Grazie mille, David. And thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure. It's always an honor to be a guest.
Well, thank you so much for being here. So, you know, Daniele, and it's funny because we were talking, chatting before we started recording. When I sent you these questions, like when I woke up this morning, I was like, maybe I'm being a little bit too pessimistic. And I think in general, I've kind of been that way. But we're recording this, unfortunately, right after the news on Kier's injury. So, Daniele, I want to ask you this. A lot has happened at Milan. I always remember your tweet on the day Maignan got injured and we knew he'd be out for at least a month. You thought the Scudetto race was over there for Milan, that they were going to be out of it. They held on. Despite that, they had two rough losses where they gave up a lot of goals. But yesterday, they do bounce back and beat Genoa. But then, unfortunately, we have the news on Kier, which really does not sound good. So let's start here. On a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel about Milan, with 10 being the night after the team wins the Champions League and 1 being the lowest point as a fan since you've been following the team?
So, having spent the last 6 seasons, except for the very last one, at one or two level, right now I'm full vaccinated about it. So, right now I'm feeling like seven or eight. Like we are killed by injuries, but it's no news for us. So, let's try to be optimistic, and I'm of course devastated by the news, and probably the news is that the season for Simon Kier is over, and it's a terrible loss for us. In other, like about, of course, what happened on the pitch, on the field, and what happened off the field, because he's like one of the most important man that we have in this young team, because he's a veteran, he's a leader, and it's a huge loss for AC Milan for our season. And but the strange thing is that I was more devastated from the news of Mike Maignan injuries, because like we saw yesterday in the game, against the Genoa, how good is Mike Maignan, and we saw in the game against Fiorentina how important could Maignan be for AC Milan. So it's terrible. Losing Simon Kier, I'm hoping that the board will will go back to the transfer market this January, because we need another defender, because we saw in the game against Sassuolo that Romagnoli is a bit of a problem. I'd say it's not Simoncier, is of course not Tomori, and we need another central back, I think.
Going
back to your main question, yes, I'd say 7 on 10, because we are in the second place. We are 1 point back the Napoli, who also is struggling with injuries. And the main problem is Inter, who is 1 point back and very good and super healthy, I'd say, but very good also.
Yeah, no, for sure. Inter have seemed to have been able to dodge these injuries, for sure. So for the next two questions, Daniel, I'm going to take you back to some of your previous appearances on the podcast. So last year, Milan had been in the Champions League for a very long time. You told us many times that you really, really wanted to hear the Champions League song again. And last year, you know, pretty early in the season, even when Milan was really first place, barely hanging on, you were always like, you know what? If you give me the opportunity to sign right now for fourth place, I'm taking it. And you told me I'd sign that in blood because I just want to get back in. So obviously now, Milan, as you said, they're right behind Napoli. I feel like every team in Serie A has some flaws. But considering all the injuries at Milan, if I made you the same proposition, like you could have fourth place right now, would you take it, or would you take the gamble of maybe having a little bit of a better season, but with the potential of dropping out of the top four?
So I want to be brave, and I don't want to play with the Scaramanzia rules, and no, I won't take this deal, because I think that AC Milan have the chance to battle through the end of the season, mainly because the difference I saw the last season between Inter and Milan was far bigger than the one that I can see right now. I think that Inter is probably a better team than AC Milan, but the difference is not huge as I saw in the last season. Napoli is a very good team. I think that they are going to lose some points, especially with their injuries, and of course there's the African Cup in January, but I think that both Osimhen and Anguissa will miss that competition. But if they are healthy, they will go in the African Cup. And Atalanta is a very strong side. We know Atalanta well, and probably they are. Like they have the best shot to aim to the champion this season, I'd say.
I agree.
The difference between the last season is that right now, at the moment, it seems like there's a battle between these four teams. I'd be very surprised if at the end of the season, the first four place, we show other team than these four, because if I'm not wrong, right now AC Milan has like 10 points, is 10 points ahead from Roma, who is
fifth
place. So 10 points in December is huge, and I think that probably these four teams will battle till the end and through the entire season. So I won't take the deal, because I believe every single team could try to win this championship. So why not AC Milan?
Fair, Fair. No, I like your bravery, and I think that is the correct answer. So I just want to ask you this, because I remember I had you on shortly after we found out that Rognic would not come to Milan after all. And I don't know if it was official that he wasn't coming, but it was right around the time that we were, that he was heavily linked to Milan, and you were very intrigued by the idea of having Rognic at Milan. So I have to say, I found the timing of Rognic going to Man United right as Pioli was signing an extension was really, really interesting. I mean, in a way, there's no correlation beyond the fact that they were both linked to Milan. So I just want to ask you this. You've had Pioli for a while. How do you feel about seeing Rognic go into Man United? Do you have any regrets on what could have been? Or you'll take meglio la gallina oggi che l'uovo domani and just take the sure thing with what Pioli has given you so far? I'm just curious because you were very fascinated by the Rognic idea.
Yes, yes, I was, absolutely. I rate Rognic a lot. I think he's very good to try to change the whole mentality of a team. And this is the concept that we need back in the days when AC Milan decided to hire Pioli. And in my opinion, at that time, Rangnick could have been like the perfect man to do this sort of revolution, I'd say. But of course, I do not understand anything about football, so I was totally wrong. And Pioli is a super coach, and he deserved the renewal of the contract. And also this revolution of the idea of this team was made by the board, so Maldini, Massara, Moncada, and the coach Pioli all together. So for us, so we had our revolution, but made in our way, I'd say. I think Rangnick is like the history of Rangnick is clear. He's a super smart man of football. He knows very well football. He's very brave in his work. Like he has no fear to do something bold. And I think probably is one of the most random relationship I could ever think about, because Manchester United and Rangnick seems like on two different planets, but probably Rangnick is the best man to try to do something good over there. Like Manchester United, it's the most similar things of the AC Milan of the last year, not the last two seasons, I'd say, but before, because the amount of wasted money over there is unbelievable, and they did very bad business in the last seasons. Of course, it's like if Milan spent one, Manchester United spent 100, because money is different. Money is different, but I think it would be very interesting to see this relationship not being a United fan. I think that probably Rangnick on the first or second days will like break everything with Ronaldo, because it's not the type of player that Rangnick is looking for. Manchester United have a lot of players who are perfect for what Rangnick think about football. I'm thinking about Rashford, I'm thinking about Greenwood. So young players, fast players, ready to learn new things and a new way of playing football. But like players as Cristiano Ronaldo has no clue with Ragnik. So it will be interesting.
Yeah,
I'm very happy to have Pioli and my board right now.
Yeah, no, I think that's the right answer. And yeah, it's fascinating. Look, like just A for Rognich, it's amazing. Linked to Milan, doesn't get it, goes to Man United. And you think of like Ronaldo, who was fleeing the dysfunction at Juve and ends up going to a place dysfunctional, and he thought he'd have Ole. Yeah, fascinating. We could go down that rabbit hole. But let's get back to Milan. I want to ask you about a couple of players. So I had this question ready even before Kier got injured. I wrote it even before, because in my mind, Tomori, we saw when he's not there, what a huge difference he makes for Milan. So I think even when Kier's there, you could have almost made a case that Tomori is the most irreplaceable player at Milan. I assume now with Kier out, this is even more true. So tell me, how impressed you've been with Tomori? Do you think he's been even better this season compared to when he arrived in January?
Yes, absolutely. He's a fantastic player. He's the perfect defender for us, because our defensive line is often at the midfield, so we have like 50 meters to cover between the line of defense and the goal. So he is one of the fastest defender I have ever seen in my life, and it's for example, think about the game we had yesterday. We had against Genoa. Genoa had the two strikers, and one it was Ekuban, who is very fast, and the other one was Bianchi. And on the other one, on Bianchi, there was of course Kier at the beginning for 40 seconds, and then Gabbia. And Tomori was like a sort of libero, so number six, so the back of Gabbia, because he was ready to go through the whole field to cover the super fast striker of Genoa, or the mistake or stuff like that from Gabbia. So he's absolutely the most irreplaceable player we have in AC Milan, because we do not have any other player with this speed and with the strong like him. And I felt even at the beginning of the season that we needed to buy someone who can replace Tomori when Tomori is out, etc., or even play with him. And if I'm not wrong, the last time I've been here, as your guest, I spoke about Bremer.
And yeah, I think I remember.
Bremer is perfect. And right now, maybe we can try to buy him in January. Even if he's playing in a defensive line with three players and not four, but Bremer could be perfect to play with or to play when Tomori is out. And but yes, Tomori is fantastic, and I really do not realize how Frank Lampard could not rate him. Of course, I'd be forever grateful to Frank Lampard for this transfer. And I'm pretty sure that we are going to enjoy Tomori for at least other one or two seasons, I'd say. Because having him, of course, the British passport, and due to rules of Premier League, etc., even with Brexit, etc., I think that in one or two seasons, we are going to have some Premier League club knocking on our door. And I hope that, of course, if you are able to pay 60 million for Mangala, you can pay also 90 million for Tomori. So, let's see.
All right. I like it. I like it. I'll make sure my co-host Alex Goldberg hears that part on the part. That was great. Okay. Let's talk about Messias. Now, you are not just a Milan fan. You're a fine connoisseur of calcio and box to box. You guys cover it all. So you knew that Messias was really, really good at Crotone. And I think, you know, the fact that he arrived at Milan when there were other targets kind of at the end of the season, and that he was this older player who was on the worst team in the league and just 1 year in Serie A, a lot of people made fun of that transfer. But I think anyone who watched a lot of Crotone was like, hey, you know, this might actually be a pretty good deal for Milan. Yeah. So are you surprised by how well Messias has done in this small sample? And did you expect him to do better than the reaction we saw on Twitter when the signing happened?
Well, I think that we have not seen the best Messias yet in AC Milan, because Messias was bought for one reason. In the last season, Messias was like the first or the second player with the most dribbling in the last part of the field, so in the attacking zone. And the other one was De Paul, if I'm not wrong. And at the end of the last season, Pioli, and this is the reason why AC Milan decided to believe in Brahim Diaz instead of Hakan Çalhanoğlu. Pioli said that AC Milan was one of the worst team for dribbling in the attacking area, attacking zone of the field. And this is the reason why we believed in Brahim and why we bought Messias. Messias is a super dribbler, and he has, of course, to realize where he is right now, but it's super good. He's super good also in scoring. For example, we have Alexis Samaker as the third choice of as a right wing, I'd say. But Alexis Samaker is doing super good things in every single part of the field, but he's not able to score. Like the last goal from Alexis Samaker is dated like 1 year ago. Messias scored three times in the last week, so basically it's better to talk about scoring. And I think that in a couple of months we are going to see the best Messias, and it's a super option for us. Also because Pioli think about Messias as a right wing, so on the right, but is also able to play behind the striker, so like a sort of seconda punta, sort of 10.
Yeah.
So he's another player that could play in different places and zones of the trequarti. And he could be very useful for AC Milan, also because Pioli doesn't care about the modulo, about the 4-2-3-1
formation,
4-3-3 formation, etc., etc. He cares about how the player is able to understand where the player should be in a certain time of the game, etc. So Messias is a player who has a good QI, talking about football. And I think in 2 months we will see the best Messias, and I think it will be fun.
Okay, yeah, I'm a fan, and a very good breakdown of what to expect from him. So let me ask you this. From now until the end of the season, who do you think is going to score more goals, Messias or Leao?
Probably Messias. Like, I'm probably the first fan in the world of Rafa Leao, because I think we saw just the 10% of his potential.
Yeah.
But in his bag right now, scoring is not the best thing he has. So Messias is in his own way a sort of veteran, because he knows the game, he knows the little trick to score, etc. And Rafa is like carbon when you can discover tons of diamonds, etc. And but I think this season Messias will score more than Leao.
Yeah, but I'm with you, Leao. Really, really impressive this season. I thought his mentality is just much better. But I'm with you. And I do think, though, Messias has more of il vizio del gol than Leao, though. So, obviously, Milan has dealt with a lot of injuries. And then we have the Africa Cup coming up as well. So you're going to need, you know, some bench players to step up a little bit. And while both Florenzi and Bakayoko really arrived for no transfer fee, these guys get paid big wages, so you got to get something out of them. If you had to guess, who's going to contribute more the rest of the season to Milan, Florenzi or Bakayoko?
I'd say Bakayoko, and at least I hope Bakayoko, because he's going to play a lot in January due to African Cup. Because of course we're going to miss both Ketsi and Benacer, and I think that right now Pioli is giving minutes to him, because he needs minutes to understand how AC Milan is playing this season. We saw Bakayoko 3 seasons ago, I'd say, with Gattuso. He started in a terrible way, and then he became like one of the best players for AC Milan that season. So we know that he needs time to be in a perfect shape and to understand the best way to play for AC Milan. But right now, like, he's not very good, and this is a huge euphemism I'm going to use. He's not very good right now, but I hope that what he needs is just time. Florenzi, I'm not a super Florenzi lover, because I think he's a bit off on the end, at the end of his career. Of course, the main problem was injuries in his career, of course. But I think once we have back Davide Calabria on the right, I think the first option will be Kalulu as backup. And so I think Florenzi will play like the last 20 minutes of games that are already decided, I think. So, between these two, I'd say Bakayoko, also because Bakayoko is on loan for this season and the next one. And Florenzi, I think, only for this season. So probably they want to give Bakayoko to give some more time to Bakayoko instead of, I'd say.
Yeah, no, fair. And I think it was very good that you highlighted the fact that Bakayoko got off to a terrible start that great season he had and got a lot better. I got to be honest, I had almost forgotten that he was on Milan this season. And I think that says a lot about Tonali and the other midfielders. But as you said, it wasn't long ago that it's not just he was one of the best players on Milan. He was really one of the great midfielders in Serie A that one season. So hopefully he gets back to that. So Daniele, before I let you go, I wanted to ask you just a couple of things on Serie A as a whole. As always, you cover it brilliantly with your colleagues over at Vox2Box. So I tend to agree with you. I think the top four, that's pretty much what it's going to be. The order might change. I don't see Roma or Lazio breaking in. Well, I'm going to ask you about Juve last. So I'm with you there on what the top four is going to look like. But when you look at the Scudetto, I've always felt very highly on Inter. And I think ever since the derby, although they didn't win, I feel even better about that pick. And look, they aren't getting injured, which is definitely helping them. But, you know, I don't really see many flaws outside from the keeper. And look, Atalanta right now are playing great. We know they get better as the season goes along. And Napoli and Milan are really dealing with a ton of injuries. So, you know, put your love for Milan a little bit aside. If you look at Serie A as a whole, if you had to pick a team to win the Scudetto right now, who would it be and why?
So if I had to bet my money, I'd go with Inter, and my heart is blooding for these words, but yes, I'd go with Inter because, as said, they are healthy at the moment. They are the champions. So of course they lost Lukaku, they lost Hakimi, they lost Conte. But Simone Inzaghi is a very good trainer, and everyone who had a look about who watched the Serie A in the last season knows that Simone Inzaghi is a very good trainer, and they are strong. They are playing a different way. If we think about the last season of Inter, but they are probably the best team in Italy. So I think if I have to bet, I'm going with Inter. And Atalanta is of course is always interesting, but every single year we saw that there was something that didn't went in the right way for them. But we have to think that this time, this season, they are very good also in the first part of the season. Because in the last season, we saw an Atalanta who was a sort of a diesel. So started low, and then with a super second half of the season, they finished in top four for like three years in a row or stuff like that. This year, they are like 3 or 4 points to be like first, so they are a problem. I think this season one of the best game of AC Milan was against Atalanta, and but Atalanta is able to be every single time a problem for you.
Yeah, and look, I thought the way they played against Juve was like a more mature team. Yeah, yes. I'm with you. Look, I kind of root for Atalanta now in Serie A because I think they're the best story in the league. And I think the approach that you did with Milan in previous years, had you told me, oh, would you sign for fourth place for Atalanta? I would always say yes for a team like that with that payroll. But this is the year where I think they can think more. Like you said, they are off to a better start. They actually have a really good goalkeeper in Musso. The defense does look a little bit better. So, yeah, I'm with you. Inter and Atalanta are my two picks as well. So let's close on Juve because I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on this. I think the club felt that, oh, we'll bring back Allegri. It'll magically go back to how it was before he left. And there, of course, there was the Ronaldo thing. And look, they've been a little bit up and down. Like, they've been a little bit better. You know, they've had some good results here or there. Are you surprised by how Allegri's return to Juve has gone so far? Or did you think the problems at Juve were just much bigger than something Allegri would be able to resolve?
I'm very surprised because I generally thought that Allegri with this team would have been enough to compete for the Serie A. The main problem is that, as you said, the problems are bigger, like Juventus have a gigantic problem talking about midfielders. They basically have just Locatelli, who is a brand new player, and the others are let me say, awful. And it's a team that has a lot of super good players, but it's like the pieces of this jigsaw are terribly wrong. So they are not good one with each other. Like if you take one piece, it's like one of the best pieces you can get. Like, I don't know, Dybala or Kulusevski, or of course Chiesa. I love Chiesa. I hate and yeah. I love Chiesa, but they are great pieces, but they are not good in the main jigsaw, in the main part. So it's I think that the board thought that they just need to have one of the best trainer they can get, and everything was okay. The main problem is that right now Juventus it's like owned by Massimiliano Allegri, who has a contract for the next three seasons at like 7 or 9, I don't remember, millions per year. So basically he is untouchable. He's untouchable. Yeah. They cannot fire Allegri, no. So Allegri could do whatever he wants. Probably he said, okay, I don't want Ronaldo, and they said, okay, no problem. We are going to sell Ronaldo, because he decided everything. And I'm surprised, because right now Juventus the risk to be outside of the Champions League race is clear. There's this risk, because as said at the beginning, like these four teams that are in the first four place for now, every single team seems better than Juventus for many reasons, but the first four are better than Juventus for now. Let's see on January if they do something, or like we saw in the first time that Juventus had Allegri, that Allegri was able to do some magic. Like I'm thinking about the position of Mandzukic in that formation. So something unexpected and very good, but I really don't know if this could be even enough right now, because the first four are running. The first four teams are running. So it's a problem for Juventus. And without Champions League, they are going to lose a tremendous amount of money. And in this period, is not very good losing money.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look, Sarri wasn't too happy that they celebrated a fourth place more than his Scudetto, but you're right. Without those revenues, they're in huge trouble. And as I've said on the pod many times, Juve has to still pay for Chiesa, Locatelli, and Kane, and that's just to keep them. And so, and you're right. There is such a huge difference between the top four. Just to give you an idea, Juve's goal differential is just +4. The worst team in the top four's goal differential is +15. So there is like a massive difference. But let's close on this, Daniele. I love your show, Vox to Box. We've had your friend Julio's been on here many times. You guys are on Patreon, killing it. But now you guys also have merch. I'm definitely going to get something. What is your favorite item of merch available on Vox2Box online store on Patreon now?
Wow. It's very hard. It's very tough for me. It's like choosing between my mom and my dad. And I say my favorite graphic, and it would be very hard to translate the meaning in English. It's the one who has the with amici amici e poi ti comprano morici.
Yeah, like, that was my favorite one. Yeah, it's hard to translate. It's a play on games, on Amici, Friends, and Muriqi. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, Friends, but then you're stuck with Muriqi, which is great. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And it's a typical phrase in Italian when you said, yeah, he said to be your friend, but later he stole your bicycle, so your beach. And we played around Beachy and Muriqi. Friends, but then they both Muriqi. And it was a super clever thing from the mighty Marco Maioli, who is one of my fella on Box to Box. He's a genius. It's like the it's like one of the best example of geniality, of genius that is on loan to the football world, because he deserves, like, I don't know, probably a Pulitzer or stuff like that. He's like one of my favorite pundit ever. And yes, we are now on boxbox.com. We have shirts, we have hats, we have basically whatever you are looking for, of course, with our beloved logo and these tricky things, mainly in Italian, I have to say. There's also a mantra from Luciano Spalletti, who is Uomini Forti, Destini Forti, Uomini Deboli, Destini Deboli, who is and that is like a strong man, strong faith, weak man, weak faith. So you know, Spalletti is a bit
he's a philosopher.
And this was too good to not be on a t-shirt. So we thought, okay, we need that that thing. And yes, we are we opened Wednesday night, and for 1 week you have the 10% discount to celebrate our birthday, because on the 28th of November it was our birthday, 5 years of Box to Box, and so if you want you can go over there
for sure. Well, Daniele, it's always wonderful chatting calcio with you. Everyone, all you guys who are learning Italian, check out Box to Box. If you're listening to this podcast and you're fluent in Italian, you probably should have been listening to Vox to Box instead. So check it out. They're great guys. They do great work. So Daniele, thank you so much for hopping on. Always a real pleasure to chat with you. And I look forward to talking more culture with you in the new year.
Thank you, David. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.